In Tynwald last week, Jason Moorhouse had two motions. The first related to DOI's refusal to allow the outgoing airport director to attend a committee hearing, and the second related to a report by the Select Committee on the regulation of the steam packet company. He joins me now to explain why. So we start for the Economic Policy Review Committee motion, and that was in relation to... you tell me.
Well, basically... The committee is responsible for looking at various areas of government, and one particular area is infrastructure, and that includes things like the airport. And last autumn, we were aware that the airport director was about to leave, and we thought it would be a good opportunity to find out what his thoughts were on the airport, his reflections, and his hopes. And so everything was set in motion. We agreed to meet him on the Friday afternoon when he was about to leave. We were quite clear with the minister and the department that it was just a single officer interview because of the nature of the airport and the nature of our questioning. And we thought that was all in hand, and we were aware that Minister Krikor was unavailable, and we kind of went towards the meeting with just the general thought of, let's get clarity on where should we be going with the airport. And unknown to the committee, the department decided this wasn't the course of action that they were choosing to accept. And the night before, at 5 o'clock, the airport director was informed that he wouldn't be attending the hearing, and the committee then found out. So we actually had everything ready to go, and the committee weren't actually informed until Friday, and one member of the committee wasn't actually aware until the pre-meeting that this wasn't going to happen. So it was all kind of last minute, and I think that's where the frustration came from, that we've been quite clear on the direction which we were going, but the department decided that they wanted to kind of change things slightly.
So I'm guessing you, as a committee, have asked the department to explain themselves. What did they say?
They were quite unclear, really, in terms of the reasoning for it. It came down to the basic supposition that the minister wanted to be there, and given that timing was limited, it was down to the final hours that the officer was in post, then it became a situation that the hearing could not take place.
So those of a suspicious mind might also suggest that perhaps the minister or the department didn't want you to have the interview with Gary Cobb, the outgoing airports director.
It is a difficult one, and with this type of situation, you can always interpret it in a variety of ways. The frustrating thing for us was that it was left the very last minute, and that's where the situation became so frustrating, and that's why we kind of went on and said we've got to actually do something going forward. And we spoke to the clerk, we spoke to Mr. Speaker on the Friday morning, and it was quite a interesting situation in terms of what could we do in that situation. And you know, we could have gone nuclear, as it were, and said we demand to see this individual. So there was that possibility, but in terms of rational thought and just being fair on other individuals, it was a case of this is, you know, we'll just have to reflect on this and ensure it doesn't happen again.
So, I mean, you mentioned going nuclear there. What does that entail?
On the last day in office, does a Tynwald committee want to request that action is taken in such a way that an officer is brought before them? And we considered it, and given the nature of the questions in front of us, we didn't think they were of a nature that actually merited that, because in terms of going for that extreme option, it was going to be highly significant. It was going to be something that rarely happens in terms of Mr. Speaker. I think he said it was something he hadn't actually been aware of previously. So it was a route that could have been taken, but in terms of having the opportunity to reflect on it and to consider the options, it was one we decided not to take.
So I guess things, what would happen then if you'd had your pre-meeting on the Friday morning and you decided at that pre-meeting, actually, yes, we were going to press the nuclear option button, that would mean that presumably a summons would be sent to said officer and they would be required to attend.
Yeah, that was the nature of it. And it was one of those kind of extreme positions to be in terms of, does the actual forcing of this hearing merit doing this? And in terms of the airport, there have been issues. There are questions over that it's been operated, there were questions over the way it is going forward. But given that officer was about to leave the island and take on another responsibility, we've got to also reflect on it from his situation and how he's going to respond. You know, he can take a horse to water, but and that's kind of the situation. Would that individual have actually been prepared to talk if his minister had given instructions that was something he didn't want him to do? So it was creating issues from all perspectives, and that was really the frustration, that we've been left to the very last moment to look at what options we could use. And given the nature of the situation, it was a case of, let's act in a way that can stop this from happening again. And that was really the priority. So that's why we did the report, which is what we did. And that's what Tim Wood has discussed.
And your two recommendations are, to summarise, that Tim Wood is of the opinion that the department's action was unacceptable. And secondly, that Tim Wood reaffirms the principle that parliamentary duties take precedence over pretty much anything else.
Yeah, and I think those two are important, and to have them in black and white is significant. It was slightly frustrating that we finished reports quite quickly, and it was laid, I think, in January, and it should have been debated last month. But we again were asked by the minister to consider delaying the debate to enable a full report to be produced. And given the nature of the issue, and it covered such a small number of players and such a short period of time, there was that frustration in terms of, let's just get this done with. But at the same time, when the council ministers are offering to actually reflect on something and produce a report, there's that realism that really makes you think, we've got to actually step back from this, push personal thoughts aside, and actually see what they come up with. And their reflections are interesting, and they do say that in terms of the situation, it was regrettable. In our first recommendation, we say it's unacceptable, but the difference between the two words is not that huge. And the council ministers to recognise it wasn't the thing to do, and to give the impression that going forward, this is something that won't be happening again, that's good, because it kind of, we've got a report saying this should happen, with the council ministers backing it to a large degree, and in a way, that has been a good outcome. Because if we'd have simply gone for that extreme option on the Friday morning, we could have ended up with a committee hearing that was of minor significance, got very little outcomes, and the committee felt smug that they'd actually forced something to happen. And I think by actually reflecting and trying to get the best outcomes, we've got something of worth here, and that's always important.
So if government is acknowledging that it is regrettable rather than unacceptable, do we know how this all happened? I mean, was it basically just the minister didn't appreciate how important parliamentary committees are, or what was the thinking?
I'm not sure. I think it just comes down to personal decisions. And for the minister, he'd got a prior engagement, and his personal thoughts at the time were that engagement takes priority. That prevents me from attending the hearing. That means that the hearing's not going to go ahead. So it was unfortunate, and hopefully it won't happen again. There were no real winners in this, but hopefully by actually having a report and a reflection from the Council of Ministers, we've got something that states this shouldn't be happening.
And of course, Minister Crookle was the minister at the time, and it's not as though he's not been around Tynwald for quite some time and sat on several of these parliamentary committees and doesn't understand how it works.
That's it. Certainly not a new boy, but it's not a bad chap, and hopefully this is a one-off.
Okay, so we'll then move on to something that was very close to your heart. I have a feeling I did an interview with you around about a year ago about this. This was the Select Committee on the Regulation of the Steam Packet Company. And you had a motion to Tynwald. It was then amended to create a Select Committee. Tell us a little bit about the thinking at the time.
Yeah, it was a frustration that on the LMM we've got a key monopoly that operates in government hands. It's owned by the government, and its key priority appears to be, look at the documentation, making a profit. And that frustrated me, because when you look at the steam packet, it is a key ingredient of all our lives. At some point in all our lives, or most of our lives, we're going to be using that boat either directly or indirectly. And it really was a frustration that on so many occasions constituents had come to me, either business people or people who were desperate to get across for a specific reason, such as the funeral of a loved one, and they felt to be outsiders. They felt like they weren't being heard, they weren't being listened to, and they weren't being cared for. So last spring, I brought a motion basically saying that we need a regulator that will look at the company and identify a mechanism that can be put in place to ensure that the users actually have some mechanism to raise concerns, to actually ensure that actions take place when they should take place. And I actually spoke to Cura, they're the regulator for the telecoms, and I said, would you have the time to actually look at this body of work and potentially identify a way forward? And they were quite positive and said, yeah, it's something, we don't know if we could take on the role as a regulator, but in the first instance, we could create a framework, an idea that could go back to Tynwald. Tynwald could discuss in terms of there being a regulator to ensure that the use of the steam packet have that level of protection they have in other areas of their life. So I went to Tynwald hoping that this would be considered. And it was one of those really strange Tynwalds in that you actually get more than you ask for, because my expectations were very limited down to the users of the steam packet, direct and indirect, and to find some way to get a layer of protection. And in came Dr. Hayward with an amendment, and that was to actually review the sea service agreement. It was like, wow, this is big, because that was basically saying we're going to look at everything, not just the deal that the passengers are getting, but the deals the businesses are getting, and the way the agreement between the infrastructure department and the company operate. It was looking at everything, and I thought, this is a biggie.
Yeah.
And then it was supported by the Treasury Minister. And I thought, we've got to ride this wave.
Yes, you're onto something.
That's it.
And of course, subsequently, because at the time, Michelle Hayward was merely MHK for Russian.
That's it.
She now finds herself as infrastructure minister with an awful lot of direct involvement with the steam packet. Is that conflict something that's made it difficult for the committee, or?
In terms of where the committee was when she became minister on the 25th of November, it was perfect because the report had been completed. It was just a matter of tying things up, and she was very dedicated to actually ensuring we got good, clear outcomes. When the report went to the Council of Ministers, she just stepped outside the room. Hmm. And what they came back with, I think, did frustrate her. She was very careful in terms of the words she used and, you know, being a minister and having to have the collective responsibility, but at the same time, having a body of work that you really think a lot about, being adapted in a way perhaps you aren't fully happy with, did give the impression she wasn't as happy as she could have been. And I think, in a way, it was useful that she'd taken on the role, because as we did our report, that thing that we kept coming back to was the role of DOI. Mm. And the role of DOI was all-encompassing. It was everything. And when we had meetings with the people like DEFA, who spoke about the businesses that were struggling, when we spoke to Enterprise, as similar things were coming through, it was always a case of, well, why aren't the steam packet hearing? And it was positive that steam packet had a representative at all our public meetings. And in many of those cases, it was Brian himself, and it was sat there, and it was kind of, but why haven't I been told this before? Hmm. And I think really that summed it up, that we've had DOI and the steam packet operating good days, bad days, for the past 5-6 years, probably longer. And we've had a situation where there's been a lack of input from other areas. And we really thought we need to expand into other areas, such as Enterprise, and have more reflections coming through in terms of what we should have in terms of the documentation. So for her to become DOI Minister and take that role on, it really did kind of highlight where we're coming from. And when we did meet with the Treasury Minister about his thoughts on the report, we were able to say, well, look at where we are now in terms of the DOI Minister. She's come from being part of this committee with many of the core ideas, and she's now going to have all this thrust back into her lap if the Council Minister's opinions are actually pushed through in Tynwald. So it was, yeah, an interesting one.
And the Sea Services Agreement effectively is a throwback to when we required, or Isle of Man government required, the steam packet to use the link span in the harbour, and it was an agreement that developed from that. And I guess the point that you make in your report is quite a valid one, that really we should be introducing a new sea services agreement, which actually looks at the situation as currently is, which is we have a government-owned company operating, so a different sea services agreement would appear anyway to the layman to be a useful thing.
Definitely, and the first recommendation is that needs to be done as soon as possible, really by the end of 2025. We need to have some documentation in place. Both the steam packet and DOI had clear thoughts on where it should be going, but we were really saying that it needs to go beyond that. We need to bring in a third party, and we were stumped initially in terms of who could carry out this role, and ultimately it became one that Enterprise could potentially do this. As we've moved on, we see that even if it's still in the hands of DOI, because there's been so much reflection on what needs to happen, what we've done could still be pushed through, and we could actually have a success at the end of the day.
You referenced in earlier there that Brian Thompson, who is the managing director of the steam package, is that his title? And that he was saying, or interjecting, if only we'd been told things like this earlier. What kind of things was he discovering that he didn't know?
Well, I think it was, I'm not sure she went into that level of detail in terms of wording, but it was that it gave the appreciation that in terms of things like the Hawleyers, especially when it was being put forward by Defa, that they were having real issues in terms of the costings and things. It seemed to be a real revelation that that was something that had not been brought to him, and it hadn't been looked at by the board. And it was quite interesting that following those interviews, that changes did drop in. And we had alterations in terms of bookings, we had alterations in terms of costings. And we do feel as a committee that, you know, we were having some kind of impact in turning the situation around. And it was a big thing to do, but, you know, and the Chief Minister was able to stand up and say, you know, these things are happening. And he was able to reference the committee and he was able to say that, you know, more is coming. And I think it was back to the point that we'd had DOI and the Scene Packet for so many years kind of been head-to-head, good days, bad days. And then the committee actually had some kind of extra input and said, well, what about this?
And, of course, famously last year, around about, was it May or June last year, the Chief Minister announced a whole series of activities that he was going to be busy on over the summer, one of which was having hard discussions with the Steam Packet, which, of course, I'm thinking of a phrase that Peter Caron used to use, but I guess it's not broadcastable. But basically, Isle of Man government wants this arm's length company, but we will get our megaphones out from time to time to shout at the arm's length company and tell them that actually we want things to be done differently. Do you think the establishment of your committee possibly spurred the Chief Minister on, or do you think this was already something they were thinking about doing?
I think it was that kind of realisation that this had become a hot political issue and the people frustrated, and there's that realisation that he could do something. And it was in July Timwald when he kind of raised this issue, and we only had a brief chat before he put this into one of his statements, and it was kind of an interesting one for us because there was that link to what would be said at the conference. And that was kind of the issue that the report was almost finished by June, and we kept saying we'll just hold on for slightly longer to see what comes out next. So with the issue with July in terms of what the Chief Minister would say in Timwald, then we had the conference in September, and then we thought, well, in terms of the structure of the company, does that really need to be looked at? Do we need to have Treasury with more hands-on, or do we need to go for a board? And to actually put in a report, go for a board without speaking to the post office, speaking to the MUA, was just going to be that straw man that they kind of pushed over and said, well, how can you put forward this without actually looking at the real evidence and supporting data for it? So our report really did have a longer tail than we hoped, and that was a frustration, but we felt that we needed to include all the key aspects and consider all the things to the ultimate level before we actually had it published.
In your conclusions, you do have the same kind of contortion of saying we acknowledge that the Steam Packet should be arm's length from government, and then say, but we think it should be a statutory board. And either it's at arm's length from government or it's a statutory board. Is this an issue where, on the one hand, politicians recognise that they probably oughtn't to be involved in day-to-day operation of a shipping company, but on the other hand, they're getting loads of flack from business and the public and various others in relation to the Steam Packet and feel that they need to have some kind of political say? Is it trying to have your cake and eat at this?
I think really it came ultimately from the first sitting we had after the summer recess. We were certain the report had got the content we were looking for, but the Steam Packet became a political football in that first sitting, and the questions for the Chief Minister, the questions for the Treasury Minister, and the questions for several other ministers. And we thought there's just a major problem here that all the ministers that have got a link to the steam packet are being asked to produce answers. Now, wouldn't it make more sense to have one individual in Tynwald who'd got the brief to be part of that steam packet coming either directly or indirectly, but able to speak in terms of what was happening? So if someone asks a question about the post office, we get a chairman in the form of Stu Peters or Julie Edge, whoever it might be. If we want to ask a question about the MUA, there's a chairman there, John Wunnenberg or whoever it might be, and they are able to answer questions. With the steam packet, we have that clarity. We've got a Treasury Minister who is a shareholder. In terms of the impact on businesses, is it him who should be answering that question, or should it be really enterprise in terms of how it's affecting business, how the department's looking at this, how they're working with the steam packet to bring better solutions? So we felt that to have one individual and a statutory board will make far more sense and often far more opportunities than we actually have at the moment. And that was really the last bit of the puzzle that took us into October, November time to complete the report.
That was Arbury Castletown and Maloo MHK Jason Moorhouse. For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayo. Thanks for listening.